Do you know what the future you is up to right now? It could be working for UPS. UPS is now hiring part-time package handlers in Louisville. For select shifts, you can now receive bonuses up to $250. They also graduate debt-free through the Metro College Program. Apply now at upsjobs.com. That's upsjobs.com. Get there.
You're listening to The Zone with Jason Anderson, presented by CC Power Sports of Louisville on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
Pre-game Louisville Southern coming up an hour from now. We are hanging out at the Troll Pub under the bridge right next to the KFC Yum Center. It's Troll Pub Tuesdays, over 25 HD TVs, all of the college football, basketball, NBA games as well. Here on the TV, and Monday Night Football you'll be watching no longer taking place in Mexico City. They've moved that to LA now because of the turf there, but this is a great spot before Cardinal basketball games, like a number of people are showing up to right now. Concerts right next to the Yum Center. Great food, great drinks, great atmosphere. Troll Pub under the bridge, a unique underground dining experience. It's always a unique experience with Mike DeCourcy. He joins us now, our college basketball insider. Mike, how are you, sir?
Well, Jason, how are you?
I am doing just fine. Looking forward to a little college basketball to watch tonight. It'll take the conversation a little bit away from Jeff Brohm and Bobby Petrino and the football team, so we can talk some basketball as well. I am curious, though. It's been 1 week. Is there anything that happened? This is an incredibly generic and general open-ended question, but anything in the first week that you've seen that's sort of surprised you, or a general or an overwhelming sort of takeaway from the college basketball very young season?
I don't know that there's any trend or anything that I would extrapolate to a week's worth of play, but there have been incidents or circumstances that caught my eye, and I think probably chief among those would have been Vanderbilt winning on the road at Southern California with a very young team, a very talented young team, but still to go on the road and win out there, I thought was very impressive and bolstered my belief that SEC, best conference.
Magic, let's see if we can try to hook up with Mike DeCourcy again, because it sounded like he said conference, SEC, and best. I don't know if he was going to say the best it's been in a while, or he thinks it's the best conference in college basketball. Those are vastly different opinions. So I am curious as to where he's going to go in his thoughts on the SEC in basketball, because, look, there are some really good teams in the SEC this year. Auburn just dominating the other night. Tennessee is obviously good. Kentucky, I mean, ultimately we'll see how good they are. Florida got punked by Florida State, but some other ones that are in there as well, and Vanderbilt, as he talked about, 2-0. Mike, we lost you when you said it reinforces, when you saw Vanderbilt, it reinforces your opinion on the SEC that, and then you cut out.
Yeah, that it will be the strongest league. You look at the top of the ACC, and this is not what will happen, because they'll have three great teams, and Syracuse will be not far behind, and Clemson will be a tough one. But I think that when you talk about a conference, I want to see teams that, like, every night you play, you're in a game. And I think that that's going to be the kind of league the SEC is this year. And Vanderbilt doing what they did at Southern Cal, it sort of reinforces that. It's always been tough to go into Memorial Gym just because of the nature of the gym, and they have good support, and they've had generally good teams. But I think now you go in there and face a team with two top 15 players on it, and a terrific coach, and a group of veterans who've played a lot of basketball, and I think that deepens the league. And then, of course, you see what Auburn is capable of, and Tennessee, and Kentucky, and Mississippi State has started well, which we anticipated they would. And I think this is going to be the best league. As I said, I think the perception will be that the ACC is, because they will have the most great teams. But for me, a league is defined by the idea of when you play, do you have a game every night? I mean, or almost every night. And I think that's going to be the nature of this SEC.
Is it a relative term, though? Do you have a game every night? Because you can be, you know, in a conference that has a bunch of bad teams that it's a game every night because, you know, they just aren't very good and it's, you know, turning the ball over back and forth. Like, and I'm not saying that's what the SEC is at all. I'm just giving it as an extreme example of a relative term. Like, when you say the best conference, do you have to have, you know, multiple teams that you look at and say can win a national championship? Look, you feel like with Duke, North Carolina, in the ACC, even Virginia's being picked by a number of people. You mentioned Syracuse is not that far behind Florida State in the win against Florida, as opposed to, you know, I looked at this SEC, conference and said, you know, Kentucky, and then I don't know if Auburn can win a national title. I don't know that Tennessee can win a national title. And Kentucky has more, you know, issues than I thought they did. How much of the high-end level team do you have to have if you're saying the best conference, not just that there's some good games every night?
Well, I think some. I think you have to have some. But I think one of the reasons why you might say Auburn, can they win it, is because they haven't. I mean, Bruce has never won it, never made the Final Four. Auburn's never won it, never come that close. I think they might have made an Elite Eight or something along the way. Back in the early 80s, I think they did, with Chuck Person and Bart. 85 maybe sounds right. I don't think that we can exclude them from the possibility of being that. I mean, if we can say that Virginia can win it, a team that a year ago lost its first game, I don't think that we can say, and I endorse that, by the way. I think Virginia can win it, but I don't think that we can exclude the possibility of Auburn performing with a really good group of players who won the league last year, and then adding back in some actual real size. I think at that point, they maybe can. I think looking at it from now, I'd say they have a shot. Tennessee is one that's still going to have to prove it to me in terms of that level of achievement,
yeah,
because I don't think they seem built for it. But the other two, I think, have a shot.
Does Auburn, and this is where my ignorance will come in with this Auburn team this year, do they have the general sort of high-end player that could carry them in a game or two to get them over the hump, where you see some of these teams that we see win a national championship every once in a while, they'll need a player, an NBA player, a highly talented guy that could be a lottery pick, that can just sort of carry a team? Duke, we know, has those. Kentucky, we feel, has those. North Carolina, like, is Auburn one of those teams that you look at and go, yeah, they've got NBA players and at least one that can that they can rely on?
Well, I think that some of that comes down to Wiley's redevelopment, return from the outer edges. What is he when he gets back? I mean, when I went to see him play for Cal or warm up, I don't think he ended up making the team. I think he got hurt. When I went to see him try out for the U-19s last year, I mean, he was a guy that people were talking about as a potential first-round pick at that point. And, of course, everything happened. He certainly wasn't able to make the cut for that in 2018. But maybe if he works his way back into good graces and becomes the player that everybody thought was coming a year ago, then maybe that they have that guy. That's what I'm saying. I'm not making any declarations that Auburn is going to win it, but from a very small sample size and, you know, a lot of conjuring and projecting, I would say it's too early to exclude the possibility.
Yeah. Mike DeCourcy is our guest on ESPN 680 105.7. Okay, a week ago, we were talking about Kentucky and Duke and winning a national championship and this team having the most answers. You and I had that discussion. Is there anything overly concerning in the first couple of games with Kentucky? Natural, growing pains, or maybe, you know, 80 minutes of basketball that you didn't see happening this early in the season that gives you pause on UK as a national championship team?
Well, you know, I think the first thing is that I would say that, and I've said this elsewhere, and I haven't mentioned, I didn't write it because I was writing about Duke. But I thought that John made a mistake, and he may have had reasons. I mean, I've heard and read about some different things about going into that game, but I didn't think that the lineup, you know, look, they weren't going to win the game. So don't anybody think I'm trying to say that if they had used my lineup, they would have won. I mean, they weren't going to win. But I think that had they gone with a different starting lineup, whether it be Quade or Emmanuel Quickly at point, I think they would have maybe had a chance to compete better. and it might not have been the embarrassment that it was, the competitive embarrassment that it was. That they might have, you know, when they were, I don't know exactly what point in the game it was, maybe 6-7 minutes in, you look up and the score is 29-10. I mean, if they had had a better offensive lineup on the floor at that point, you know, maybe it's 29-16, and you're at least thinking you got a shot to compete and maybe do something similar to what Michigan State did at the end of its Kansas game. When you look up and it's 2019 and you're that far into the game, at that point, you know, it's a complete shock to your competitive juices. I mean, and you could see the result, the impact on that it had on every Kentucky player to be buried in such an onslaught. And I thought that, you know, the thing that Ashton Hagans does best is defend. And we saw him in the Bahamas come in and change games or amp up games, I guess, because they were always doing well, but amp up their defense and make them even better in circumstances. But I don't know that offensively at this point in his career he's a high-level player, that he's an elite player. It may be someday, based on developments of other players there that have gone through there and college generally, I think he'll probably be a very good offensive player in time. But I don't think he is yet. And so I thought that their offense really didn't move and didn't work early on, and that if Quickley had been out there perhaps, like I said, they might have just made 2, 3, 4 more baskets than they did in that period. And so then, like I said, there wasn't much they could do to stop what was happening to them. Those guys from Duke were just at the very tops of their games, all three of them. All three of the freshmen were just really playing well. And you weren't going to stop R.J. Barrett, Zion Williamson, Cam Reddish all at once, especially when they're playing that well. And so you were going to be behind, and you were going to give up a bunch of points. But, you know, like I said, maybe you could have scored some and at least been somewhere in the vicinity of the game. And so that's kind of what I felt happened. And then once they got buried like that, I mean, they were so shocked that I don't think they could recover from that. And people think that athletes don't feel that, but I mean, we've seen it so many times that they just. You expect things to go a certain way, and then all of a sudden things go so far the other way that you just can't get the ship right. And yeah. I think that's what happened to them.
I do, too. I think about the 10-minute mark, the game was over. And maybe it was over when you talked about it. Was it 6 or 7 minutes into the game? I thought the 10-minute mark, the game was over because I felt Kentucky checking out. Like, on the court, like, as you're talking about, almost from a demoralizing standpoint of, you know, they weren't defending. They were giving up straight line drives. But at the beginning of the game, I would say, like, the first couple of minutes, I thought it was encouraging to a degree that, you know, Duke was knocking down threes. But, you know, looking at the teams and assessing them before they took the court, it's like, well, Kentucky's a better shooting team than Duke. Duke's not going to be the team that lives outside the three-point line. And it was 14-6 or 14-8 at one point, and 12 of the 14 for Duke came behind the arc, and every one of Kentucky's points came at the basket. And I thought, well, Duke's not going to keep that up. And if I'm choosing a team, I think I'm going to choose the team that's scoring at the rim because I feel like that's got a better chance of continuing, and it didn't. And then Kentucky stopped attacking. And then
right.
You know, they stopped playing defense, and it was like everything fell apart so fast because of the way that R.J. Barrett and Zion Williamson just sort of stood out on the floor. And I wonder if there was a little bit of a, no, we're good, we're good, we're good, and then you see those guys that you can't stop, and then you kind of feel like, oh, what's the point? You know, I wonder if there's a little bit of that that's set in.
Oh, I think that's exactly what happened. I mean, I think that they felt more or less helpless, that there wasn't much they could do. And you know, I think that a lot of that came from Reddish. I think they expected Williamson and Barrett to be great. I think Reddish starting off so hot certainly hurt them as much as anything. I mean, those guys had seen Reddish. They know what he was about.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I think that I do think that, you know, I talked about this with you a week ago that he had been a low motor guy and a player that a lot of people weren't impressed by, and I think that choosing Duke was wise for him, not necessarily choosing Duke vis-a-vis Kentucky or whatever, but going to a program where you were going to be pushed in two directions, one by your coach, you know, it could have happened at Kentucky too, and two by your peers. Because if Cam Reddish is not playing with great effort, as gifted as he is, those other two guys are going to make him look like he can't play because they are great. And so, you know, if he's not playing with great effort, he looks bad. And, like, guys don't want to look bad. So the peer pressure raises his effort level, and then he's a great player because he is a great talent. And that's – so that's why he becomes – you know, and I'll admit, I didn't really – you know, I did think that Mike would make him better. I just didn't think that it would happen this fast. Yeah. But I do think that the peer pressure of wanting to be on the level of your of the guys that are standing next to you, not being this little brother or whatever, but being a guy that they talk about all three of you. Not because if you're Cam Reddish and you're not playing hard, it's easy to get squeezed out of the picture because those other two guys are tremendous.
Yeah. Mike DeCourcy is our guest. I want to talk Louisville and Indiana, but real quick, Kentucky has, North Dakota, VMI, Winthrop, Tennessee State, Monmouth. What are you looking to see from this team? Is it just improved defense, improved fight until the next sort of test? I mean, look, I guess December 8th, Seton Hall, Utah, North Carolina, Louisville, but it's until December 8th that we're going to watch Kentucky play a number of these directional states. What do you want to see over the next month from this Kentucky team before they take the court and say, here you go, let's see where you're at from where you were, you know, on the 6th?
Well, I think the first thing that they have to do, and I think this is what we talked about last week, or the first thing that they had to do last week, and I don't think they got it right, is they have to get the point guard situation right. And how do you play those three guys? And I don't think that there's any question that they will play at times that two of them at a time. But how do you start? How do you rotate? What do you want each player to bring? I think that's the first thing that they have to get right. And then the second thing I think they have to get right is the post rotation. And I include PJ in that as well, although he's not really a post. I mean, he can certainly post up. But, you know, however you want to play those three guys, because they all have great ability. I mean, we saw the one guy who probably didn't look bad against Duke was Reed Travis, one of the few in that game. And then, of course, what Nick was able to do in the Southern Illinois game, amazing. 19 rebounds, man. That's like 1952. That's what they used to do, Bill Russell and Cliff Hagan and those guys used to do that, man. But nobody does that now. That's an amazing performance that he delivered there. So we know he's got to be part of it. And then, of course, as I said with PJ, you got to get him going because he is one of the best players on the team, and he has to be one of the best players on the team, and he's not been that to date.
Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News, our guest. Louisville getting ready for Southern coming up tonight. 6 o'clock is the pregame, and that'll be with Marcus Maben and Steve Rummage. Mike, this Louisville team, they struggled against Nicholls State at times. A couple of things I learned from Chris Mack, and you've watched him up close and personal more. Nicholls State went on a run late, and it looked like Louisville was on the ropes, and Mack didn't call a timeout. And he just essentially said after the game, and then he said yesterday in his press conference, no, I wanted to see how they would respond. Is that typical the way he coaches, like the Roy Williams strategy of I'm not going to call a timeout when those guys are in a run because my team will figure it out? Or is that just sort of the building a foundation of starting a program that's the way he's going to adjust and say, I need to know what my team's made of so I know how to coach the rest of the season? Like, what do you make of that when Nicholls State was making a run and he said, you guys do it, it's on you?
Yeah, I think he's trying to learn his team, A, and maybe send a little message, B, I'm not going to always be there to bail you out. You know, you got to solve some of these problems yourself. I will say that if they had a lead on Carolina, say, and Nasir Little was storming up the floor or whatever, I think they're going to call timeout in that game. He's not going to sacrifice his ability to strategize in a game that's winnable against a great opponent or a significant opponent. I think he felt like they would probably figure it out in a game like that, and he needed them to do that. And he also wanted to see who would be the ones who would do it. I mean, these guys, he's coached them regularly for 5 or 6 months now, but this is one of the first chances he's had to see them under actual game conditions with the real pressure on. And he got a chance to learn something about them, and he was wise to take it, and he did it because he's a terrific coach.
Yeah, I think a lot of people learn that Stephen Enoch is pretty good, too. I think that's kind of a big one this year for Louisville. 9 of 9 from the free throw line as well, 8 rebounds. A couple of those on the offensive side had a couple blocks, 15 points as well. You mentioned sort of he wanted to see from his team, and as you were talking, it's sort of at least a question of, you know, this season, is there more of a difficult, like anytime you start over a program and it's in year number one, it's going to be different than year number four or five. But I'm curious how much there is on Chris Mack's table of, you know, balancing from I need to lay the foundation of my program versus, you know, I've got an opportunity to win a game. You know, he mentioned I can't teach toughness if I tell you to do something, you don't do it, and then I start you. Well, Jordan Ward didn't start on Thursday night. So I think that was said for, you know, kind of a reason. And so I'm wondering about, you know, building a program versus, you know, that balance of, well, you got to go win games too because this team can make the NCAA tournament and my job ultimately is to win games while also building a program. Like, how is he, you know, weighting that this year? Or do you think that task is for Chris Mack to do that?
Well, I don't know who it was that most recently said, you can learn lessons while you win as well. So, I mean, he's a smart guy. And he's a good coach. He's not going to sacrifice a result to prove a point. Now, I mean, he's not going to sacrifice discipline to get a result. I mean, if he has to, like, if he's got to suspend somebody or something, he's going to do that. If he's got to bench somebody because of, you know, something that can't stand, then he's going to do that. But just in a typical circumstance, whether it's, like you said, a timeout, whether he leaves them on the floor. I mean, I think he understands that he's got better guys and he's probably going to be able to survive that. And so you can prove your point and teach your lesson while still winning the basketball game. I don't know that any of this is going to happen. If a guy's late to a meeting, I mean, that guy's going to be disciplined. Something like that. I mean, they don't allow players to get away with stuff. I mean, he's going to enforce discipline, if they ever have to, you know, and the ideal is to get yourself to a point in a program where you very rarely have to. And we see that around the country that you don't, you know, how many times has John had to discipline guys versus what Rick was going through 3 and 4 years ago, where, you know, in two consecutive years, I think he had to remove significant players, starting quality players from his program. Yeah. That's not standard. It's certainly not desirable. So I think that the ideal is you build a culture wherein where you enforce that what the behaviors are going to be allowed, and then you enforce those penalties if they're necessary, and you recruit guys who are going to be, you know, on board. And going back to his time at Xavier, I can't remember many significant behavioral problems that they had, if any. I can't recall any circumstances where they had to remove a player. There may have been one somewhere along the way. I mean, they had the fight with Cincinnati. That was 2011. It was an isolated kind of circumstance, and the players involved were mostly guys that had been very good citizens up to that point and were very good citizens afterward. It was just an isolated circumstance that got away from them, and it was over, you know, as soon as their suspensions were served.
Visiting with Mike DeCourcy, our college basketball insider. Indiana, unlike Kentucky, has a number of tests that are right around the corner the next couple of weeks. They've got Marquette tomorrow night. They go to Arkansas. They've got Duke on the 27th of November. So they got a number of teams that they're going to have to show up and play against. In the first couple of games, people are obviously paying attention to Romeo. Is the defense that we've seen, is that schedule-induced, or is this Archie Miller team going to be one that can survive on defense, and if their offense comes around, they can be really good?
Oh, I think they have the opportunity to be an excellent defensive team, and some of that comes from adding Romeo to the mix. I mean, big, long, and I've always believed that he would be a really good college defender because he has got such a great head for the game. He is a beautiful player to watch. That's the word I use when I watch him, because he is – I mean, there's an elegance to the way he plays the game of basketball. He's so smooth and makes such great moves and is always doing the right things. And so that includes, defense. Now, some of the things that he'll be introduced to early on will be relatively unfamiliar, and he won't necessarily be fully adept and fully comfortable doing all of them, but he covers a lot of that ground with his basketball IQ and his intelligence and understanding of the game. So from that standpoint, you know, I think they're built to be a great defensive team, but their offense has flowed very well over the course of those first two games. Again, it's some of its opposition. I mean, they have they have not played even good low major teams. So I would say that, you know, they're taking an enormous step up in class tomorrow night when they're defensive teams in the country, and it will challenge their defense in ways that they haven't seen since they played Michigan a year ago or something like that. So, of course, Robert Phinisee didn't play in that game, and Romeo Langford didn't play in that game. And so, and Deron Davis didn't play in those games because, you know, those guys are freshmen and he was hurt. And so it's going to be a much different game against Marquette tomorrow night than anything they faced to this point.
But they are getting the home crowd on their their side tomorrow night before they head off to Arkansas. That'll be a fun one, too, just because it's in Fayetteville. And then, of course, going to a Cameron. I was joking, Mike, and then we'll get to our Final Four, that last Tuesday night watching the game, you had Indiana and Louisville fans who were like, oh, that's awesome, Kentucky's losing. Oh, crap, we got to play that Duke team. Son of a gun. Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News, the Big Ten Network, is our guest. Final Four time for you, Mike. Four quickies. Just tell me the first thing that pops in your head if you are ready.
I am ready.
All right. Was Tuesday night more about Duke or Kentucky, if you had to choose a side?
Oh, I have to say Duke.
Okay. Along those lines, you can take one player to start your team, R.J. Barrett or Zion?
Am I starting a protein?
I don't know, both. Is there a different answer for either?
Yeah, I guess if it was a pro team, I would take RJ. I think that, you know, as he's proven to me that he is at least determined to evolve into an excellent shooter, and if he's an excellent shooter, he becomes an all-star level player. But for college, to have a guy like Zion that is such a physical force as well as being really skilled, as well as having an infectious personality, I'd take him because I think that he affects the game in more ways. I don't think either of them is necessarily going to be an elite college defender, but I think that Zion will make elite college defensive plays, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
There will be moments. He'll change moments. I think RJ will do his job. I think Zion will do his job, but you'll see from Zion big moments where he might, you know, affect the outcome.
I mean, I knew he was a physical freak, but then on Tuesday it just pops off the screen. I mean, he is an alien.
Person.
Yeah.
Have I told you my story about my first encounter with him?
No.
Okay. So I was at the Peach Jam last year, and then Adidas had their deal in Spartanburg because of Zion, which always cracks me up. And so I go up on Friday afternoon after the first 2.5 days of the Peach Jam, and so I get to the gym, and there's no rosters left for the media. None. But the schedule says, like, right now, Zion's team is playing. So I go over to court four or whatever, and I got no idea. But I've seen him, you know, I've seen all the YouTube stuff at that point. And I look out on the floor, and I'm like, well, it can't be that guy. This guy must be some football player that's going to Clemson next year, and he's just staying in shape. No, one of these other guys have to be Zion. And then I see him play, and it's like, nope, that's him. I mean, it just doesn't seem possible when you see him in person that he can do all the things that you see him do on TV or on YouTube. It's crazy. He's just the most amazing physical specimen that I can remember seeing.
Yeah, when they put up his height and weight and it was Aaron Judge, I'm like, yeah, now that puts it into perspective for me as to what he looks like on the floor. He's got other big guys that are around him. That's always sort of difficult to see the height because you get tall people there. But his athletic ability and how quick he is and sort of his feet, and you're like, oh, he's a monster of a human being because if he played baseball, he would be Aaron Judge that everybody marvels at what his size is. Like, it's amazing to think about.
I mean, if he wanted to be a starting left tackle in the NFL. I mean, he's got all the physical attributes to be that. But, you know, he can do this, so why not? It's more fun.
Well, George Fant from WKU did that and went on to the Seahawks to be a starting left tackle in the NFL. Did you want Le'Veon Bell to report?
Yes, as an insurance policy against James Conner getting injured.
All right. And then last but not least, since it's been the talk of the town, who is the next Louisville football coach, Mike?
Ooh, man. Oh, golly. I wish I'd prepped for this one. I the only way I can answer is I don't think it's going to be Jeff Brohm. I don't think so. That would be my guess.
Well, if you say not Brohm, then it really doesn't matter who the answer is because nobody's going to care at that point.
I don't claim any inside knowledge. I just know that, you know, to uproot after 2 years and the 2 years are going well and you got a great boss and I understand the appeal of home and that, you know, I understand it as well as anybody. I mean, I've been away from Pittsburgh for 27 years now, so I understand the appeal of home. But remember, it made more sense for our careers to stay away, and that's what we did. So, that's why I think that that he'll stay where he is.
All right, how about that? Mike DeCourcy trying to annoy all the Louisville football fans and basketball fans while they get ready for basketball tonight. Well done, Mike. Mike DeCourcy.
Really popular now.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a sort of a joke of like, well, what if not Brohm? I don't know. Well, what if they don't get Brohm? Doesn't matter. Who do you hire? Doesn't matter. They're all the same. It's the same coach. It's just
it does matter.
Absolutely, yes.
Because, hey, when Cincinnati's job was open, I thought that P.J. Fleck should take it because it would be a great launching point to a great BCS job as it has been for everybody that has held it for the last 20 years. And he instead went to Minnesota. And I thought, well, you know, they missed out on the big one. And then look what they're doing with Luke Fickell. He's been phenomenal. So it does matter. And there are great coaches out there. If it's not Brohm, Charlie Tyree's job is to get somebody that's like Brohm.
Also, his son, Vince Tyree's job is to get somebody like Brohm as well.
Oh, my bad. Sorry about that.
You're good.
I'm struggling with first names this early in the basketball season.
It's all good. I struggle with names all the time. It's a running joke here on the show. So I just know that Vince Tyree, if it's not Brohm, is going to introduce the next coach of the Louisville Cardinals. It is not Jeff Brohm. We'll see. They won't even hear the name. It'll just be named not Jeff Brohm. Mike DeCourcy, the Sporting News, the Big Ten Network. Mike, you're the man. I certainly appreciate the time, my friend. Enjoy the basketball. We will talk soon.
Thanks, Jason.
All right, there's Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News and the Big Ten Network as well. He's going with, I don't know who the coach is, but he does not expect it to be Jeff Brohm. So we shall see. Although he did say that's not from any inside information, but just sort of using his life experience of what's been the best for his career is not returning to Pittsburgh. Whereas, you know, his hometown is Pittsburgh, and it's been 27 years since he's returned. It just happened to work out that way that, you know, the calling of Pittsburgh and going home has been there, but his career path has been each step along the way was better to take a different job. We'll see if that ends up being the case with Jeff Brohm. I joke about it just being in general, not Jeff Brohm. I think if Venables is hired, I think fans can get around that if he's the guy. I'm not sure there's another name that would unite Louisville. Clearly, there's no name that would do it like Jeff Brohm. But outside of that, maybe the second one that would do that would be Brent Venables. I've heard a bunch of people tell me that, you know, no thank you to Mike Leach, although I think they're crazy to no thank you to Mike Leach. It's like you're turning your nose up at Mike Leach. Okay, sure. Fine, whatever. Bobby's going 2-10, all right, in year number 5. I will go out on a limb and say Mike Leach in year number 5 will not have a program falling apart at the seams. I will take a... although that's not a big deal. Like, that's a low bar. There's a low standard there. Whoever they hire, year number 5 will not be 2-10. That's the point. And certainly you've heard no to Neil Brown because of the UK connections that are obviously there. I think Dino Babers, again, Vegas installed Babers at 12-1. Again, if you're just joining us and hadn't seen the latest odds, Bovada has said... the odds of Louisville's next head coach, Jeff Brohm, 10-11. Neil Brown, 4-1. Ryan Day, 9-2. Brent Venables, 6-1. Luke Fickell at Cincinnati, 7-1. Dino Babers, 12-1. Matt Campbell, 12-1 from Iowa State. Jason Candle at Toledo at 16-1. Although, I mean, Toledo's 5-5 this year. necessarily look at that as like going to be some hot candidate. And Scott Satterfield from Appalachian State is also 16-1. Vegas is saying there's one guy, Brom, and then after that there's a group of three that it could be: Brown, Day, Venables, and after that, it's a number of other guys you can certainly throw in there as well. There's a number of places you can find fitness equipment, but you're not going to get the experience and the deal and working with guys like Chris and Pat Wider that you will get at the fitness market. You know, look, the weather outside. I don't want to run outside tonight. Maybe you enjoy that. I certainly don't. I don't want to have to deal with traffic to go to the gym as well and try to fight with, different people on the ellipticals or the treadmills. I didn't want to have to do that. So I go to the fitness market. I see Chris and Pat Wider. They've been in business for 18 years with the Treadmill Medic, and they're local people that want to take care of the locals. And you know what? They're offering right now fantastic deals. You can get a Precor treadmill for as low as $39 a month, or you can own a world-famous Precor EFX elliptical for as low as $36 a month. Also, offers up to 60 months no-interest financing that's there. And it's not just, treadmills, but they've got ellipticals and spin bikes and rowing machines and the e-bikes. And along with that, they've got all different brands. Wife and I got the Precor treadmill, but they've got Landice and Matrix and Spirit and Kaiser and Voice. They've got all of those different things. And I mentioned that they've got the Treadmill Medic. They service, they deliver, they install. It's all one-stop shop. It's all in one place. There's no red tape. There's nothing that you need to go to a different company to deliver it, a different company to install it, or a different company to go and service it. It's all at the Fitness Market. Go check them out, thefitnessmarket.com. Two great locations, Westport Road just inside the Snyder, or the Superstore, Plantside Drive at the corner of Watterson Trail. We will take a timeout, come back, and we'll continue our talks. We discussed a lot in the first hour about my general thoughts continuing of Bobby Petrino and the decision by Vince Tyree, but also it was talking about the sort of timing on Sunday, which I thought was interesting that Kent Taylor brought up. The money aspect that Drew Diener brought up this morning that I thought was a really interesting point of, is it worth $1 million to hire him before December 5th? So we'll get into all of that and continue with more. Don't forget, 6 o'clock is the pregame show with the Louisville Cardinals, as Marcus Maben and Steve Rummage will be at the Gold House. And do not forget as well the postgame show, the Coors Light postgame show, also at the Gold House with Steve Rummage as well. And your first place to hear from Chris Mack and take your phone calls and sound from the locker room, it's all coming your way tonight. More Zone rolling along. We're at the Troll Pub on a Tuesday. It's Troll Pub Tuesdays. Continue wrapping things up on the other side. It's ESPN 680 105.7.
Time now for an ESPN Louisville Sports Center update.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Michael Barnett, and this Sports Center update is brought to you by the Louisville Men's Clinic. ED got you down? Call the Louisville Men's Clinic today at 444-4000. Also brought to you by Universal Windows Direct. Buy one window, get one free. 0% financing for 36 months and free installation. You'll be saying, "I love my windows." Lorenzo Ward is the new interim head coach for Louisville football, but is he the long-term answer? Signs point to Vince Tyree looking elsewhere, and no name higher on more lists than Jeff Brohm up in Purdue. Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports on the V Show yesterday argued that Purdue may not be able to keep the Louisville native from heading home.
Mike Babinski, who's the AD there, may just say, look, there's no amount of money we can hope to raise that would keep you from Louisville. If he wants it, he wants it. I don't know if there's a number that would keep him.
Bovada also releasing their odds for the next Louisville head coach opening. Brohm the favorite at 10-11 odds. Troy headman Neil Brown second at 4-1 odds. Ryan Day, the Ohio State offensive coordinator, at 9-2 odds. The Cards host 14th-ranked NC State Saturday at 12:20. ESPN Louisville had almost 12 hours of live coverage this weekend covering Bobby Petrino's firing, and we'll have you covered whenever his replacement is announced. Cards basketball hosts Southern University tonight at 7 p.m. Chris Mack in his Monday press conference claimed he's trying to instill the toughness in his team that he didn't see in the opener.
I think it's through what you accept as a coach and what you value. We like to do drills that I think promote that toughness, whether it's physical toughness or mental toughness, and reward those players that understand that and carry it out.
Louisville pregame starts at 6 tonight with Marcus Maben. Postgame immediately to follow the final result on 93.9 The Ville. More Zone with Jason Harrison next. Wrapping the show, this has been Sports Center.
Welcome back to The Zone, presented by CC Power Sports of Louisville on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now, here's Jason Anderson.
We continue hanging out at the Troll Pub, a Troll Pub Tuesday, ESPN Louisville's Troll Pub Tuesdays, as we are here each and every Tuesday until the basketball season is over. Over 24, 25, I should say. Well, I guess if I say over 25, then technically, factually correct, it would be over 24 as well. Over one TVs here in the Troll Pub, also over 25 HD TVs. Here, they got everything, college football, basketball, NFL, NBA games, they got it all down here at the Troll Pub. Great before Cardinal basketball games, which is what a number of Cardinal fans are doing right now, hanging out, enjoying some little libations, a little pre-gaming, if you want to call it that, some food, getting ready to go over and watch Louisville take on Southern, the second installment of the Chris Mack era at Louisville. So also concerts that are going on at the KFC Yum Center as well, right next door. Great food, great drinks, great atmosphere, Troll Pub under the bridge. We talked a number of different things at the beginning of the show, and I want to bring up a couple of quick points. One, Kent Taylor told the story this morning, and I thought it was hilarious. Whether that means you're stepping on a man or kicking a man when he's down, whatever, I still think it was funny that Kent Taylor told the story with Drew that they taped the coach's show at 10:40 or until 10:40. At 10:40, Bobby Petrino left the studio, and at 11 o'clock, he had a meeting with Vince Tyre. And 11:10, he was fired. So Bobby Petrino leaves the studio of his coach's show and drives to get fired by the AD. And the AD knows he's doing his coach's show, which is why they set up the meeting for 11 o'clock. So my question is, like, did Tyre do that on purpose to sort of, like, you know, drive and twist the knife a little bit? Or was he sending a sort of tip of the cap to Kent Taylor and wave and, like, look, man, I'm not trying to screw up your guys's, your sponsors, your shows, all of that stuff. I'll let you do the show. We're still going to fire him, though, and it's going to come out while the show is on. And by the way, Kent Taylor, good on you in having that scroll go on underneath the pre-taped show, because there's been so much publicity of Bobby Petrino there on Wave and the coach's show inside the cards, in which a lot of other people have joked and switched that to outside the cards. That's got a lot of pub there. So I thought that was a pretty funny story. Maybe it's King Demand when he's down. I don't know. He's got $14 million. I don't know how down that is. I don't know. Money can't buy you happiness. Well, it buys you jet skis, and I've never seen somebody mad on a jet ski, so I've seen everybody pretty happy, so there you go. Drew Diener, this is what I was trying to think of. Drew Diener brought up a point this morning, and I agree with him, and I think it's a really interesting point. They're pot committed at this point. They've got $14 million they're paying to Bobby Petrino. They're going to owe either $3.2 or $4.3 to Jeff Brohm at Purdue to be able to get him to be the head coach. That's before or after December 4th. Before December 5th, it's going to be 4.3. After, it's 3.2. So the question is, and I think it's a great point, those 10 days from November 25th to December 5th, you'll pay $1 million more to hire them then. And so it's two sides to the question. One, does it make sense for Louisville to pay $1 million to get 10 extra days of this guy being your head coach and going out and recruiting and getting some of those players that are in the transfer portal or looking at the paperwork to get them to stay on board? Is it worth that? I say yes. Drew is right. They're pot committed. If I'm looking at it and I've got $17 million already, is it that big of a difference to say it's 18 to where I get Jeff Brohm in, if that's the case, 10 days earlier when you've got signing day on December 19th? And the flip side of that is, if you're Purdue and you know that Jeff Brohm is going to leave and you've already sort of had those discussions, do they look at it and go, let's meet in the middle, because I don't want to sit around for 2 weeks until December 5th or 10 days to try to find the next head coach when we know this guy's gone and we're just waiting so that they can wait out and pay us $1 million more. Let's meet in the middle, $500,000, and we'll go from there. I do wonder if that will happen. All right, it's time for Top Round, Top Sound of the Day, presented by Top Round Roast Beef, St. Matthew's Shelbyville Road, just east of Hubbard's Lane. And it's the best roast beef you're going to have. Tell them you listen to ESPN. Fries and a drink are yours with the purchase of any sandwich. And do not forget the custard. I don't care if it's cold outside. It is well worth it. Mike Francesa does not know who Dino Babers is. and apparently does not know who Stan Lee is as well. Top run, top sign of the day. He was asked about Stan Lee. He doesn't know who he is, so he does not care.
Hey, what's up, Mike?
What's happening?
Hey, Mike, Stan Lee died today. Did you ever meet the guy? What do you think of him?
Eddie in Hoboken. What's up, Eddie?
Hey, what's up, Mike?
What's happening?
Hey, Mike, Stan Lee died today. Did you ever meet the guy? What do you think of him?
Stan Lee.
Yeah, Stan Lee.
I don't know who he is. Don't know who he is, no.
Jesus.
Who is he? Who is he? Who is Stan Lee?
He was one of the creators of Marvel Comics.
Oh, who cares? I mean, I'm sorry. I'm not a comic book guy. Is that who he is, Stan Lee?
The guy who created Spider-Man. That was his big thing.
Oh, created Spider-Man? Sorry. I never was a comic book reader as a kid. I apologize. Never.
He was the comic book. Oh, who cares? All right, and then this morning with Drew Deaner, Billy Reid, they're talking about the comics, and Billy Reid saying, hey, it's Superman, it's all these other, it's DC, it's not Marvel, and Drew Deaner offering him some pointed thoughts on what those comics are.
You know, I've looked up DC Comics here, and I think you've been riding the wrong horse. I mean, Superman, Batman, The Flash, Wonder Woman,
oh, I know.
Green Arrow, Nightwing, Green Lantern, and the Aquaman. I mean, that is a lineup.
Yeah, but they're yesterday's news. Yeah,
well, so am I.
So am I.
The Aquaman. Wonderful.
Aquaman. There's a difference there. It's not the Aquaman. It's the Aquaman there. I do love that. They're yesterday's news. Well, so am I. And I do love this.
So am I.
This text, we will end it on this. Texter says, if Jeff isn't the hire, I'll take a media pass and start a question with, hey, not Jeff Brohm, what's the first step in getting the program back on track? Louisville pregame, Marcus Maven, Steve Rummage is coming up next. They are live from the Gold House. Enjoy it.
And that's the bottom line.
Jason Anderson.
Are you ready to get behind the wheel of a UPS tractor trailer? Seasonal tractor trailer drivers earn $32 an hour. Drivers must be at least 21 years of age, have a Class A CDL with T endorsement, 2 years of tractor trailer experience, and be able to drive a standard transmission. As a driver, you could participate in team driving, in-town runs, or help at a local UPS facility. Are you ready to get on the road? Apply now at upsjobs.com. That's upsjobs.com.